Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Another week in the hole. How are we holding up, boys? Dale, Matt, I'm Simon. How's it going?
I'm all right. That's just such a weird little introduction.
There are people that are quite worried about your sanity, Cardi.
I'm exactly the same as I normally am.
Yeah. HR are one of them as well. They're very worried. They've had several complaints.
If anything, positive of all this, getting a lot more sleep than I usually do. So,
really? I thought you were like up way later than you normally are.
No, I'm only up like an hour later, but I get up like 2 hours after, so I'm actually probably getting about an hour more than I usually
do. Look at this.
It doesn't have to get up till 9:29 now, so it's easy.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, 9:15 if I shower. Yeah, probably shouldn't have said if. But I've actually had a lot on this week, as have us all. It's been after maybe a week or two, a bit of a lull, things are kicking off again. Lots happening this week. First of all, I reviewed a game called Predator Hunting Grounds, which, if you didn't know, is a game about Predator. Is it based on the film? He is.
Well, I mean, it's based on the first hunting grounds. It's based on the first film specifically, really.
It's set in modern day, so it's, you know.
It's like the Predator reboot.
Yeah. So did Dutch and characters?
They still exist, I think, because in the notes they're like on the tutorial bit about mudding up. So in this game you can use the ground to muddy your body up to
Arnie's passed that lore down through the generation.
The thing they say, like, from like 80s research, like, we learned this, is what they basically say. So yeah, you can cover your body in mud temporarily to hide your heat signature from the predator, because in this game, basically, you either play as the predator and you have to try and kill the four human players, or you play as one of the four human players and you have to complete a mission and or kill the predator. That's the main problem with the game, really, that it should be all about completing your objective and trying to avoid the predator, really, but inevitably, every game turns into let's kill the predator because he's far too easy to kill, which is a shame. Yeah.
For what? Who's the person that's supposed to be like the universe's apex predator, the ultimate killing machine? Yeah. He's surprisingly easy to absolutely own.
Yeah. Oh. That's the, like, if you basically stick together as a four and never, like, it's fairly easy to do that as well. You don't really need to split up at any. It's not like that would be a good thing for the game if, like, so basically,
yeah, force you to go off and do multiple objectives.
Like, you have objectives on the map, but you go there, they're one at a time, and you can stick to a four. And if you stick as a four in this game, you can pretty much destroy the predator in a minute if he doesn't run away. And even if he runs away, just follow the luminous green stuff and you'll find
him. Chase him down.
But yeah, I think that's actually, I hadn't thought of that. It's a good way to balance the game, is if there was like two objectives you had to do simultaneously, so you had to split into like two teams of two, it would make you feel much more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a good twist.
The games of it I've really enjoyed are ones where the predator is really good at picking off one at a time.
Yeah.
And like saying you've got one straggler at the back of the pack, downing them, and then letting the other three either carry on running on or try and come and heal them. And then that's an opportunity to
pounce. That is the problem. And I know that's the problem with a lot of games. It's going to be dictated by the quality of player you're playing against.
Yeah.
But this game seems super reliant on, if you're not playing against someone who's very familiar with how to play as the predator, you're not gonna have a great time, I don't think, because there's also AI like guerrilla fighters to kill as well, but they offer very little challenge at all, really.
They're just a distraction.
They're just bullet fodder, really. And yeah, it's just, I really wanted to like this game and I was looking forward to it, and I do think somewhere in there is a good game. Like, the idea of a 4v1 predator game should work. And I know a lot of people are enjoying it more than me. I just have struggled to consistently find it fun. But I do think, like, it might be a similar situation to Friday the 13th when that launched. No one, like, there was a seed of an idea in there. It was just a broken game. Whereas this game isn't necessarily broken. It's just very unbalanced, I think. But
yeah, I think the big
in
difference
time, people will, it could be a good game.
Yeah, the big difference between the two, I think, is even day one, Jason was a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And I think even after years of playing that game, only towards the last couple of months did I ever try and assemble the people I'm playing with to say, let's take down Jason, that we can do this if we all team up. Mm-hmm. And there's like seven of you as well when you're doing that. With Predator, it's been out like a week and I'm already a few days in, we're already like, oh, the Predator's hurt, let's get him, let's chase him down. And it should, that dynamic should never exist. It should always be trying to avoid him. And if you do manage to kill him, it should be 1 in 100 opportunity. And it should have been like you were extremely lucky in that situation because he fucked up too bad. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you kill him pretty much every other game.
Exactly. That's my main issue. Too often the hunted become the hunter, and that should not be that scenario. Yeah.
I think the fundamental difference is that Friday the 13th is set up where everybody is separated at the start. And you know that the only way to take Jason down, or at least to escape him, is to work together as a tight-knit group. So it's the start of that game, or like maybe the first third of a match, is about trying to find each other and figure out, well, what are our tools? Because you start as a fire squad and you're together, all four of you, and you know that it takes all four of you to take him down, there's absolutely no point in doing anything that splits you up. Whereas if perhaps instead of coming in a helicopter and rappelling out, you came in a battle royale style plane and you all bailed out at different times and you had to find your way through the jungle to each other, then there'd be that element that would help. Okay, exactly. So I found you. Let's try and find the other two. And the other two are being picked off and all of that. I can see that working. But it needs a real change with the way that that game is. It works to make that happen.
Yeah, you could also have the like, you start off with everything you need to take him down as well. Mm-hmm. Like if it was a situation where you dropped in and you don't have the best guns, maybe you just have a handgun or something, and then you can find better weapons as you go. And like you said, and then meet up together. So if you really work together, you can take this thing down. But otherwise, you don't stand a chance. I think that would be a much better dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, that's what I wrote in my review as well. Like, there's very little means that the Predator can divide and conquer the prey. Like, he can't, there's no real way of splitting them off. Like, he has the net gun, which is probably the most effective way, which can just trap people temporarily in it and they have to break out. At least that immobilizes people. But yeah, it's just, it's too easy to play on that side at the moment. And it also, like, the one thing about Friday the 13th, which is by no means a great polished game, but when you play it, it is 9 times out of 10 something hilarious happens and you have fun with your friends. In this game, for a series which is very campy, and like the original Predator is like, it's a tongue-in-cheek action film, like there's one-liners all over the place, this game is, there's not very much of that. It's all a little bit too serious.
Yeah, characters could have done with more personality. Like, I remember when we first got announced, we were talking about, oh, I'd love to get a Carl Weathers skin or something like that. Or just, you know, just a way to bring the personality of the film with their costumes and their appearance and one-liners. None of that exists. I think maybe on the voice command wheel, they say, get to the chopper. Mm. That's about it. Like, there's nothing else, really. Yeah, it needs that personality.
Just a bit of a shame.
It needs a little bit more from, as you say, from those films. You know how in the film the Predator shoots Dylan's arm off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why can't the Predator remove people's limbs and then suddenly you have to swap to a different weapon because you can't hold? Yeah,
exactly. And that's what like, big part of the end of Predator is you find out you can't just one-on-one take him down, which is what you do in the game. Like, you have to use traps and you have to, like, basically lure him into, like, Arnie lures him into that big like log trap, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. At the end,
yeah.
It's like, if you could just set up things like that, like just a bit more. It feels, it's all just a bit too straightforward. You just go from A to B and it's done. Like,
that's crazy that you mention about the kills as well. Because one thing Friday 13th had was Jason had like 50 different types of kills. Like, you could unlock more as you went, but there's some of them were like context sensitive around the environment. Predator literally has two, and they're just, one's a sped up version of the other one, and it's just claim them, rip their skull out, or rip their skull out with their spine, and that's it.
It all just, feels like it all just feels early access and a bit rushed to me. Like, I know often those things aren't, you can't often always blame a studio because it's not in their hands all the time when a game comes out. But I do honestly think in a year it could be a much better game. I know
I agree,
that's not much for people that are buying it now, but
it, I think there's still value there. But it's, yes, right now it's not the finished article. It needs work and it needs refining. And then hopefully, like you said, in a year's time, it could be like what Battlefront 2 became or No Man's Sky or something like that. They could like really refine the format.
Did become a
Friday 13th,
game.
Yeah. Although saying that, the core of Friday 13th was always there.
Yeah, I suppose that dynamic was there. But yeah, that is why I gave it a 5 out of 10, which is mediocre, which pretty much sums it up. Dale, you've reviewed a game.
I have. It's back. That's 26 years. Streets of Rage, it's back. So yeah, I reviewed Streets of Rage 4. It's actually my first ever review for IGN as well, which is a bit scary.
Congratulations, Dale.
Thank you.
How's it feel? Take us through the process.
There's a lot of feeling anxious, a lot of doubting myself a lot of the time. But no, I think like I got help through with some of the reviews team and stuff, and I really feel like they helped me boil down what my thought process with this game was, and that is a very good game, but it doesn't feel like it takes any massive steps forward. Like, it still feels like this game could have came out 15 years ago and it would have been an accurate street. It would have been the exact same Streets of Rage 4. Like, there's small improvements which are great, and I really do like all the improvements. I just feel like it doesn't feel like a 2020 game.
See, I'd have no idea where to start on a review of this game because it's just not my genre, or I've never really got into those style of games, so I wouldn't know really what makes a good one. I briefly remember playing Streets of Rage 1 or 2 at my granddad's house, probably when I was about 6 or 7. Like, I think he had a Genesis, and that's my only real memories of playing Streets of Rage.
So in case anyone doesn't know as well, Streets of Rage is an arcade beat-em-up, which is the side-scrolling one. So you move from plate to plate, and you have bad guys in there. You take out the bad guys. You beat up the bad guys as usually two-player. And then there's objects in the environment that you can hit to get points and health pickups and weapon pickups. That's basically it. You move from screen to screen, beating guys up. But there is a lot of fun to be had, like, especially like for someone like me who did play the original 3 like quite religiously, and I used to play it with my brother quite a lot. It was a game we played together. There was a lot of fond memories there, and I do think it recaptures a lot of that, and especially because it's got two-player online co-op, and it's also got four-player local co-op. I didn't get to play four-player because we're stuck in houses right now, and I don't have four people. I haven't got four people.
Well, you've got two Ans, you and your wife, two Ans each, play with one.
I would never be able to get my wife to play this game. Because I was playing it loads of reviews as well. At one point, she walked past me, looked at it, and she goes, "I hate this game." I was like, "It's a good job you're not reviewing it." No, but I played online with Jesse. Me and Jesse played the whole game together online, and we had a really good fun time doing it. But there's still so many things that feel like 90s as well.
How long is the game?
So my first playthrough was about between 2 and 3 hours, so it's not massive, and that's dying multiple times as well. Like, now I could do that game in 50 minutes, I think. Each stage is about 5 to 10 minutes, and there's 12 of them.
Or what, how long ago was 3?
So 1994. Ooh, so 26 years.
That is longer than I even thought.
And I think that's the problem as well. Like, that's 26 years, but it still feels like just an iterative like update. It doesn't feel like a significant one. Like, it
looked
visually,
all the nostalgia.
Visually, it looks incredible, and absolutely they're going for nostalgia. And it's plainly obvious. Like, in the marketing campaign for that, they were talking about all the retro characters and all the retro. You can change all the filters, and you have all the old sound effects, music. They know the audience, right? And they targeted that. And I think I say in the review, if they're trying to make like a modern version of Streets of Rage that hits all those nostalgia hits and appeases that crowd, then they absolutely nailed it. What I wanted was just a few more extra steps. Like, the whole game the whole game feels mostly sluggish to me, and I felt like in the 90s that worked, but now it felt like this could be a lot faster. We could move quicker, the combat could be more intense, the combos could be better. There could be more variety in the combos instead of punch, punch, kick, punch, punch, kick, special move, punch, kick. Like, I feel like there's more that could be done with the combat. But it is a good game, and I expect it to sell well as well, so hopefully you see Streets of Rage 5, and then who knows what they could do with that.
Dot Emu are the guys doing Windjammers 2 as well. Where's Windjammers 2? Get that out. I want to throw some discs.
Did you, Matt, did you have any interest in Streets of Rage?
When I was a kid, I'd never played it at all. I can remember it was on the Mega Drive, right? I remember a lot of friends being super into it, but it took me a long time to get into games that weren't based on things that I already knew. So my Mega Drive was just full of Disney games as a kid. I just played like Toy Story games and the Donald Duck stuff. And so it probably wouldn't have been until I had a PC, probably by 99, 2000, that I would have started playing games that weren't based on other things. So Streets of Rage completely passed me by. But I did. Can you remember the Scott Pilgrim game they did?
Yes, yeah.
That was a Streets of Rage homage, basically,
wasn't it?
Absolutely,
it was a Streets of Rage game,
yeah. I had a great time with that, so I'd probably have a great time with Streets of Rage, I reckon.
Yeah, that Scott Pilgrim game, I have such a hazy memory of it because I remember really liking it. I played it loads, and then because it just disappeared and now you can no longer get it, I can barely remember. I really should watch like a YouTube video of it because I barely remember it, apart from the fact that it was like a Streets of Rage clone is basically what it was.
You can't. Am I right in thinking you can't get that game anymore?
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, yeah, you can't get it anywhere. It's because the license ran out. Is that right?
Something like that. And I mean, I mainly really fondly remember it for the music because it got a really, really good chiptune soundtrack, which it really nicely meshed with both the gameplay of that game and what you know of Scott Pilgrim from the movies and the comics. It was kind of a really cool little project, and like it cost next to nothing. I remember that being really cool. But yeah, so I think I'd probably get something out of Streets of Rage. It's not my favourite genre, but...
I do think, it's good fun to play co-op. Like, playing it on your own, I definitely felt moments like the repetition. And like I said, the sluggishness is the biggest thing for me. Like, when you're moving through environments, especially when you play as Floyd, who's like a big tanks character, so he's obviously slower than the other characters. But it moves so incredibly sluggish that it feels like a 90s game at that point.
It's almost... copying the slower frame rate of those games, right? And I guess is the feel of that frame rate so part of the DNA of those games that they feel they can't go away from it?
Potentially. I definitely feel like they knew their motive, right? They knew our agenda is we've got to deliver this nostalgic experience and put a modern lick of paint on it, and that then maybe make a couple of like modern tiny touches, but don't rock the boat too much, really. Don't upset the fans. And it definitely feels like that, and it succeeds at that. I just was personally looking for just a little bit more out of it. But it's a good game.
Do you know who did rock the boat a lot?
Oh, here we go.
The Vikings. And they're on their long ships. Yeah.
Assassin's Creed.
Oh, do you not see him on the seas rocking all over the place?
Did I see the Vikings on the seas? No, yeah. I didn't. No.
Oh, you never
lived. Before my time.
You never lived. have you been to the Jorvik Viking Centre in York, though?
I have.
Oh, I went on a school trip as a kid. Yeah, it was very good.
That's a good school trip, that.
Yeah, it's excellent.
I just think my family did like a weekend break to York one time, but...
I was in the Midlands. It was a little easier to get up north, wasn't it?
It's not that close, though. It's still about 3 or 4 hours away, isn't it?
It was a long-ass journey there. And I'd be, 9 years old, 10 years old? It was a very impatient journey, I can tell you that.
I was lucky enough when I went to uni in Leeds to go to York a couple of times. I love one of my favourite UK cities. There you go. I'm not going to make a list
Such
of those
a partridge
right now.
Moment. There we go. Right in with your favourite cities.
I love to have a little wander down the shambles. anyway, Assassin's Creed is coming. We don't know if it's coming to York, but you'd imagine if it's a Viking invasion of England game that York may well feature at some point.
Yes, please.
Have announced Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Yeah, good name.
It looks very much my cup of tea.
That trailer looks incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the visual fidelity of it is like... I think it may be one of the best like CGI trailers I've ever seen, like visually. It's just so
incredible. The Assassin's ones are always so good. And they always do their little like piano version of a song as well.
But it's also like, you know, the use of light and environment and stuff in that trailer just really sets the tone for what we're going to experience. And though, like, you know, siege combat as well, I'd imagine is going to be incredible.
And it's just good to know yet again another confirmed thing for next gen, because we still haven't heard that much of what's coming for it. And we know that it says holiday 2020, so we don't know if it's a launch game yet, but it is coming soon after the PS5 and Xbox One X Series X come out.
I'll tell you guys, but I really love a game announcement, then 6 months later you've got the game situation.
Yeah, it's great. But this game, we obviously don't know too much about it. We know that you play as a Viking, which is cool, because mm-hmm. so often the Vikings are kind of
the baddies. Pictured,
yeah, as the villains, and we don't know, like, history obviously is told from the side of the victors, so we don't mm-hmm. know how bad. They obviously did a lot of not savoury stuff, but they also... Who knows if they were bad? I just sound like a real big, like...
I think they were...
Viking apologist.
Apologist here, yeah. Like, I think they were good guys.
As someone by my blonde hair who clearly has Scandinavian roots somewhere in the thing, I'm going to say they were probably nice people. They just liked raiding.
you're into them because you exist because of them, mate.
Exactly.
I'm into it.
But I like that, from the sounds of it, they're taking some of the stuff that people love from Black Flag, but mixing mm-hmm. that with also a lot of what people love from Odyssey, which sounds like a good combo to me. You've got, I'm guessing there's, well, they've shown ships. There's got to be some form of naval combat going on if you've got long ships.
Probably, yeah.
You've also got, they're hinting heavily towards, you basically have a whole settlement. You kind of look after. We don't know in what degree that is, if it's like a town you have to keep intact, or if it's more like, I remember when the build up to Red Dead 2, they were talking a lot about, oh, you have to keep your camp healthy and stuff. You didn't really have to do anything for them.
Yeah.
Like, it was remember nice to in go
Assassin's,
there.
Assassin's Creed 2, it probably wasn't as complicated as what I'm remembering, but it felt like you had your, where his villa was and your area, and you constantly had to funnel money in and upgrade elements.
Yeah,
like, you did.
You were building up your home base, weren't you? I really liked that, and I'd love to see that like progress further.
I think that's what
well.
We might see.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It seems really to cool. be hinting at that. The other thing I know is because we by now will have a lovely article on site mm-hmm. from Jonathan, mm-hmm. who's spoken to the gameplay director, who's actually Ashraf Ismail, who's one of my favorite Assassin's Creed directors. He directed Black Flag and he directed Origins, which I Perfect. Think are the two of the big crux moments in this series. Black Flag mm-hmm. really did something new with what Assassin's Creed could be. All that pirate stuff was brilliant. And Origins is the one that transformed it into what is a really, really solid RPG now. It's gone, because I don't think Assassin's Creed has ever actually been a good stealth game. And I think the decision to transform it into a big open world RPG is probably the best move they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see what his... He's the guy that obviously transforms the series and people, and then the other studios sort of iterate on what he has moved around, at mm-hmm. least for the last couple of generations. So I'm really excited to see what he's doing with this one.
Mm. I'm looking forward to seeing some castles.
Yeah, castles, good. Let's smash them up.
I hope we get like full-on sieges, that'll be cool.
If you could pull a little bit of, you know how in, if any of you guys played For Honor, where you can do the big castle battles in that, where you've just got hundreds of guys with you.
Mm.
They obviously had the conquest battles in Assassin's Creed Odyssey where you were working with dozens and dozens of other people. Like, I'd love to see a segment where you're running through a moat up to the gates of a castle.
I feel like we may get those battles back just from that CGI trailer. It's pretty much a battle scene. So I'm guessing we are going to, and they even had a bit of, like, Odin appears in the trailer and then turns into a raven.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've gone heavy on mythical stuff in the past couple of games, and yeah, it'd be cool to see a lot of that come into it as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been thinking recently about things like God of War, which really opened my eyes to, because God of War doesn't look at the traditional mythology. It, you know, major characters in that game are Thor's two sons, which are just never really mentioned when you think of Norse mythology.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited to see what bits that it digs into, because if you're playing as a Viking and your religion is the Norse pagan religion, it's probably going to give us a bit of an eye-opener. Yeah. And it's going to be from the perspective of actual Vikings rather than... Because so many games, you are part of the, like, the Aesir or whatever element of the pantheon. You actually are a god. Whereas in this point, we're actually seeing it from the perspective of Vikings.
Yeah, I
find all of this fascinating. I love Norse storytelling, so...
Yeah, it's so good. And I love also the fact that, like, I think the main part of the game is in England, but you can go back to Scandinavia, I think in particular Norway, at any point. And I would like if almost it is split in that way, like you have all your real world stuff in England, and then you go back to Norway, and that's where all the mythological kind of like side missions come into it, and you can do all those bits, and maybe that's, you go back there to get like weird upgrades, like maybe you're going to be able to wield Thor's hammer or something that looks like it at some point. Yeah. Aren't you?
You'll also get taught basically how, because berserkers, which are like effectively a common video game trope now, but that is a Viking thing where these guys believed that they were basically part of the cult of the bear, and they wear furs and build themselves into a frenzy, and they go out and attack. That is clearly a skill tree path, isn't it, to build yourself into a frenzied warrior.
Dale, have you ever worn a animal's pelt, covered yourself in the blood of an enemy, and run around the garden?
Just that one time, but then the police got involved, so it's probably best I don't do it again.
Yeah, don't use the axes like you do. Matt, you've been playing a game. You haven't reviewed a game, but you have been playing one.
No, I did not review this one, but I have been playing XCOM Chimera Squad, which, when Dale, you were saying, isn't it great that you get an announcement and then 6 months later you get the game? Well, Chimera Squad was, I think it was, they announced it and a week later it came out.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Bang it. And it came out for £8.50.
Bang in.
£8.50.
What a deal.
It's good.
It's not even that short an XCOM game, is it?
So since I'm in front of my PC, I have done 20 hours in Chimera Squad, according to Steam.
Nice.
And I'm not finished yet.
Sweet. Ooh. Is that just because you can't get past the first mission? Or
It is not, Simon. I'm actually okay at tactics games, so...
Do you know what that's randomly reminded me of? You know, in Caddy, you all know this. Maybe not in the full version, but in Football Manager, they have that little counter that shows you, like, value you're getting in the game. So it says, like, how many minutes, like, how many pence per hour you spent in the game.
Oh, you do not get that in the full one, there.
Really? No. I love that.
It tells you how long you've played for, not value.
But it's just, I thought, I wish every game had that, so I knew what value I was getting out of it. Carry on anyway, I'm going to find out how much I've...
I actually do enjoy tactics games, but I, unlike you, Matt, aren't very good at them, especially XCOM. I've played a lot of XCOM, and I normally get halfway through the game, realise what I've got put together cannot get me much further, and then give up.
They're hard, and I think XCOM is notably hard, especially if it's your first tactics game. But... I think, I'm not going to say that this one is easier, but the way that your squad is assembled is quite different, which gives you, I think, a lot more tactical options from the offset. So it is not technically a sequel to XCOM 2, but it is a sequel in the fact that canonically it takes place after XCOM 2. It is the next chapter of that story. So in XCOM 1, we had to deal with the fact that aliens had invaded Earth and you were playing as the XCOM project defending the planet. XCOM 2 was about, okay, the aliens actually won that war, and XCOM was now a rebellion movement striking from the shadows. By XCOM Chimera Squad, it's Earth has now managed to broker a peace deal with the aliens, so now aliens live among us. Chimera Squad is an XCOM initiative, and as we know, Chimera is the mixing of species. Mm-hmm. Your squad is a mixture of species of different aliens and humans. And you're now basically a police team. So the actual scale of the game has gone from, it's not a global map where you're dealing with global threats. It's actually set, it's all around City 31. And basically the mayor has been killed by a terrorist group. Oh, and your squad is chasing the leads. But obviously your squad is, you've got a few humans on there and you've got a few of all of the different types of XCOM races. So one of them is a viper, which is basically a giant snake. One is, I can't remember what the bigger guys are called, but they're effectively the Hulk. So you can have him Hulk out and go and smash things up. You've got the Sectoids, which are, I guess, your classic grey aliens that can use...
The what? Yeah. What did you say then?
Sectoids.
Okay, right. We both thought you said something else. dual senses.
No, you definitely do not ship Virgin from Ann Summers, I can tell you that.
Sorry, we derailed you there.
So you've got all of these different characters, but they all have the elements of either the race that they come from or maybe the background that they were trained in. So each of your humans tend to have slightly different elements that are more based around gunplay or hacking and stuff like that, whereas your aliens all have, like, Torku's the Viper. She can pull things in with her tongue and then wrap around them and choke them out, or she can use poison.
Is she not a sextoid?
No, I mean, she's a viper, but maybe, I don't know, what your bag is, Cardi.
you'll never find out.
Well, all of this ties together to what they've done is each of the missions are basically like SWAT takedown missions. So you start with a set of doors and you breach them and create like a surprise attack on the people that are in the room. And as you're doing that, you can throw grenades in as you enter the room. And then it becomes a very, very quick fire way that you go through it. Whereas XCOM missions traditionally are quite slow, methodical elements where you're moving five people around and trying to figure out, okay, if I move this guy here and move this person four squares to next to them, they might be able to join up and focus on this enemy. Chimera Squad is much more based on, it's an initiative-based turn, so one person takes a turn, another person takes a turn, and you're moving between characters rather than sides, that allows much more minute-based tactics around specific people rather than squads.
Yeah,
and so it feels much faster, it's much more in line with that SWAT element, so while it's not... You definitely wouldn't say it's XCOM 3 because it doesn't feel advanced enough to be XCOM 3. It's not got huge changes. But the small changes it does make makes for a very different feeling game. And I think it's really good. I think I genuinely think it's an absolutely cracking game.
Am I right in thinking
game.
There's no permadeath in it as well? Because that's a big thing in XCOM, isn't it?
Yeah, so what in traditional XCOM, obviously, you'd have randomly created characters. And the general way that people would play that is they'd normally give them names, and quite often you'd name them after your mates, and then it's quite funny to sort of tell people, like, you send a text to your mate and go, oh, sorry, I got you killed because you were just an absolute shit shot. Whereas in Chimera Squad, each of those characters are actual characters with personalities. They have dialogue and quips that they talk throughout the missions and stuff like that. So obviously, if you killed them, with the amount of times people die in XCOM, those character writers would have had to have designed like 100 different characters for you to survive a campaign. So now, if they get killed in a mission, they're KO'd, you bring them back to base with you, and they get what's called a scar, which is basically a debuff. So sometimes that's they no longer have as much health as they used to. They might have had 15 health. No, they only have 9. Whereas for some people, it might impact their mobility, so they can't move as far, impact their aim, so they're a shitter shot. And basically, you can put them into rehabilitation to get that scar off them.
Wasn't there a game that had something like that recently? Where it was... The Hunt Showdown had something like that?
You can lose characters in that, yeah.
Yeah.
Does that inherently make you play more aggressively as well? Because you haven't got that thing at the back of your head saying, oh, if I take a risk here, this person's gone forever.
So it's interesting. It does the thing that I really like that XCOM 1 does that XCOM 2 didn't do so much. Is that, you know how in the whole idea of XCOM is turning the tables on your aggressors. So you learn how to make better weapons, which means that gradually actually the game gets slightly easier as you go on because suddenly all your characters are really buff. It's kind of got that in that at the start of the game, you actually play really cautiously because if one of your characters gets shot and you have to put them into rehabilitation, it takes them about 3 or 4 days to rehabilitate from that scar, which means that at the beginning of the game, you'll only have one set of squad members. So you've got 4 and you need all 4 of them on the battlefield. So if one of them gets shot, you have to take them in with you and they're going to have less health or not be as good at shooting. Whereas as the game goes on and you gradually recruit more characters, it becomes not as debilitating to have a character out of action for a while. So then as you go on, you can play a little bit more aggressively because you don't have to worry if that person gets knocked out because it's fine to not have them in battle for a while. So there's that to balance. But yeah, I guess in total, if you've got someone that's an incredible shot with a bunch of really good abilities they've built up over the game, then you don't have to worry. There's no fear in sending them right out on the front line and being super aggressive. So it does certainly change the tone of the game. And the game in general is quite a lot funnier than XCOM generally is. It's a buddy cop game, for lack of a better term.
All right.
Yeah. I might check it out. I'm guessing it's only PC at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that's how XCOM 2 launched, right? It was only PC at the start and then they bought into console. So I think once they've worked out the bugs, because this... I absolutely understand that it was an £8.50 game, so I have no right necessarily to fully complain about this, but this game is not quite ready. There are a lot of bugs, and some of them range from animations where I certainly in my, I think they might have patched it out by now, but certainly my first few days that I was playing it, if I had Torque, who's the snake-like character, do a specific attack, it would lock her animation. So everything she'd do, it was almost like moving a chess piece around. She just didn't do anything, which is quite annoying because then all the other animations break around her. And quite frequently, like, things in the menu don't work properly, and they tell you, like, if you stack people up against the door, it's only the second person that's stacked that can, like, chuck a grenade in. But quite often it'll tell me, no, this character can't chuck a grenade. But if you click it, it will just let you do it. But the menu is telling you you can't. And there's all little elements like this that are just mildly annoying. And because the gameplay is so good, I'm going to forgive it.
I will check it out.
It needs a good patch.
I tend to give every XCOM game at least a go. So I will give it a go at some point. I also want to play, finally, Telling Lies, because that came out on Switch, PS4, and Xbox, I think, this week. The what's his name? I've completely forgotten. I do apologize.
Sam Marlowe, isn't it?
That's it. Apologies, Sam. You probably not listened to this. But her story was very good, and I've been wanting to play Telling Lies for ages. And do you know what? I've waited all this time, and I probably will just end up playing it on PC, because I've been meaning to for months, and it came out on all consoles this week, and it only served as a reminder for me to get it on PC. So, because it all takes place on a laptop anyway, I think, so it feels weird. Yeah. It's probably the best place to play it. So I'll probably be playing that this weekend. But this week, some stuff I've been doing is me and Joe played through Euro 2020. If you're missing a bit of It's Football Day, we've got it back in kind of a partial way. It's not really It's Football Day, but it is me and Joe playing Football Manager, so it's kind of close.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, right? That's what you want.
We have released, they'll all be out by the time you listen to this, a three-part series with the lovely guys and gal at the Football Ramble Daily, who are a very good, if you're into football and you don't listen to the Football Ramble, sort it out, because they're brilliant. But yeah, me and Joe have played through Euro 2020, because that's not happening in real life anymore, sadly. So we've done it instead as England. And we've got three different pairs of commentary teams from the Football Ramble commentating on the matches. And it is, at times, very funny. So I would welcome you to listen to that. Well, listen to it. I say surreal. Watch it. It's all on YouTube on site. We were going to do it as a podcast, but it just, we listen to it, and it doesn't really work without seeing the matches themselves, sadly. But it's all on YouTube if you search Football Ramble IGN.
You want to see what people are reacting to as well. And hearing those voices talk about Football Manager games like it's the real deal as well.
Yeah,
it's very surreal, but it's very entertaining as well.
So yeah, if you're into football, get on that. If you're not into football, still give it a go. I mean, I don't blame you. You have very little interest in that, to be honest.
If you like to hear Cardi and Joe chatting, and then some extra
voices. I mean, we're in it a lot less than the other guys, but you know, you guess enough. I've also been carrying watching The Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls. It's just a sports section for me. That's the Chicago Bulls documentary about them in the 90s on Netflix. Mm. It's still very good. There's two episodes every Monday. The last two kind of focused on Dennis Rodman.
So I've only seen the first two. I didn't realize there's two a week.
Yeah, two every Monday. So you've got two more to watch. And the last two are very good, even better probably. And yeah, they focus a lot on Dennis Rodman, who,
good,
as well as being an incredible basketball player, is a character.
And also, don't you have a story about Dennis
Rodman? Oh yeah, I've been in the same swimming pool as Dennis Rodman, which is a bizarre thing. Well,
in my head, I thought you'd said, what they called, like a miniature spa thing. Like a jacuzzi. For some reason, when you told me that story before, I thought it was a jacuzzi.
It was a small swimming pool in LA. I was lucky enough. So my school did a mad school trip to Hollywood for sixth form.
That is such a posho, isn't he? Look at him, going to Hollywood for school.
Like, luckily my parents saved up for years for me to go on that. But like, they send sixth form media students on a media trip to Hollywood for a week. It's just a holiday for the teachers.
I went to the Motor Museum in Coventry.
I had the choice between that or Barbados for the football and cricket tour. And I chose Hollywood.
Fair
but
enough.
Yeah, basically the hotel we were staying at, which the Roosevelt on Hollywood Boulevard, Dennis Rodman must have been staying there because he was in the swimming pool one morning.
I bet you're staying at the same hotel that celebrities are staying at as well.
And
this
also
the most expensive trip.
As we were leaving, Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords and What We Do in the Shadow helped my friend's suitcase down the stairs. So he was a nice man.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was a weird time to be 17 because you can't do a lot in Hollywood when you're 17. But
apart from celebrities, apart from swimming with Dennis Rodman.
That might be the title of my biography, Swimming with Dennis Rodman.
I mean, I wouldn't go around shouting that you were a 17-year-old swimming with Dennis Rodman. It's not the best look, is it?
He's not known for any of that.
He might be now, though.
Well,
he might start something off.
Well, it's on record. Nothing happened. Dale, what, have you been swimming?
Hey, back to Dennis Rodman. I can imagine all his like hair dye and stuff like that just seeping into the swimming pool as well. He looks like a very dirty man at all times as well.
Wow. I don't know if his hair was dyed when I think he just had his natural hair at this time, but very
what?
Tattooed man.
Yeah,
this
very
was
tattooed, very
a good
pissed.
10 years ago now, so. Yeah.
Anyway, what was the question? Have I been swimming?
Yeah, have you been swimming with Dennis Rodman?
Yeah. Not with Dennis Rodman, no, but I have been swimming once or twice.
Have you?
Yeah.
What's your favourite stroke?
Ooh. I think a traditional breaststroke is probably
right into IGN_UKfeedback.com. Is that it?
Yeah, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
What is your favourite swimming stroke and why?
Caddy, you strike me as a doggy paddle kind of guy.
I'm the same as you. Standard front crawl, no messing.
Yeah.
Just get across, make a splash. That's
you're
how I get through life, really. Get
you're
through
not doing
quickly
the big
and make a
maneuver.
Oh, no. Which, complex. It's not butterfly, it's, what's the one that looks really odd? Butterfly, no, breast, no, front, right. What's the other
no
one?
No idea, mate. Not exactly an expert in swimming.
What have you been doing, Dale, though? Sorry.
So apart from playing Streets of Rage and Predator, so I've been rewatching the MCU every night, and I think that's just because in the UK we've obviously recently got Disney Plus, and I find myself staying up later at night and I'm looking for things to watch. I started off by watching Iron Man, then I thought, I'll watch Iron Man 2. And then I just sort of spiraled in, and now I'm up to Winter Soldier right now. I'm halfway through Winter Soldier.
So are you doing them all in proper order?
So I'm doing about half a film a night. I watch half a film, and then I'll watch the second half of it the next night. I did only watch half of Thor: The Dark World, because I got halfway through it, and I was like, really can't be asked
still
to carry on.
It's still one of the two I've not seen.
The second half of Thor 2, though, is the better half. Like, you get the portal battle in the second half.
I think the problem is, it's not the Thor I like. Mm. I like Thor Ragnarok and it doesn't feel the same.
You didn't like Thor before Thor Ragnarok?
Even the first Thor, I thought, was a very good film when it came out. I didn't enjoy it as much. I think that was very early days, though, and I think like, the spectacle's been raised so much, it's hard to sort of compete with that now. But I did... I still don't really enjoy the first Captain America either. I don't know what it is.
Really?
It
I like the first me. One.
But I think Winter Soldier really, like, I'm only halfway through it right now, and I've seen it before, obviously, but it's really doing
it's
it for
good,
me.
Very good, isn't
it? And I'm excited to get to Civil War, I think, is the one I'm really excited to get to, because I've only ever watched that the one time at the cinema when it came out.
Oh, so. Civil War is... Yeah, maybe... It's in my top five. I love Civil War. I think I prefer it to Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I think I'm going to skip over Guardians of the Galaxy, and I mean the reason is I've seen it so many times, and it's so self-contained. I don't feel the need to watch it again. I really love that film. I just don't need to watch it again. I'm watching the ones that I don't really remember as well. I think like Iron Man 3. I watched that the other day, and that is a brilliant film. I really like that film. Yeah, I was always surprised with the hate that film got.
Oh, it's
I think
so much that's better than two.
Oh yeah, but I think part of maybe the hate is down to. It promises the Mandarin, and I guess for at that time, I think even at the Iron Man 3 point, even though the world was getting MCU fever, quite a lot of the conversation was geared by the comic book readers. I think those people definitely wanted the Mandarin because he's such an iconic villain for Iron Man. And they got a good joke. Mm. And nerds aren't always well known for taking a good joke, are they?
See, the thing I like about the MCU the most right now is the comedy. I feel like the inclusion of comedy into pretty much every film is always like something that keeps you watching. That's why I love Guardians of the Galaxy so much, and I really love Ant-Man as well because of that.
Well, it's just like when you go to the supermarket, like you're looking for a good Mandarin and they've only got Satsumas. I mean, it's just a letdown. And I prefer a Clement.
I can tell you've been sitting on that for about... You've been sitting on that for about 30 seconds.
You really
you're just waiting for me to shut up so you
this.
Can get that in.
you were just also, waiting for me to shut up. Also, I want rankings on IGN, underscore UK feedback, IGN.com. I want your top three smaller-sized orange fruits. We're not counting bigger oranges. We're talking tangerines, satsumas, clementines. You know, clementines are my personal favourite. I'll have you know.
Just fruits in general, so like kiwi fruit could be in there.
Orange fruit, Sale. Listen.
Oh, I wasn't listening to you, mate. How many different orange, small orange fruits are there?
There'll be some. People will know some. People always know their fruits. I say you know if you didn't really know someone, do they know their fruit? Matt, do you know your fruit?
I know apples.
What's your favourite apple?
So until recently, it used to be the Jazz, but it's now the Pink Lady.
Ooh, yes, Pink Lady is the king.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of talk of the Honey Crisp, but I've never actually had a Honey Crisp.
I've been hearing a lot of that recently. A lot of rumours in the wind about the Honey Crisp.
What are these circles that you used to were in talking about Honey Crisp apples?
Are you not on fruitchat.com?
It's the Reddit.
It's really good.
Apple.
When I was younger, I was all about the Golden Delicious and the Granny Smith. But Granny Smith is far too bitter for me.
Oh, so I have fond memories of the Granny Smith being a real good, sharp apple. Bought some the other day. Shit, mate. Utter shit.
They need to be really fresh at Granny Smith. Like, really fresh. Like, if they just got off just a little bit, get rid of them in the bin. Mm.
Do you eat apples while you cloud game, Matt?
I've been eating grapes, actually, while I cloud game.
What have you been cloud gaming?
So I've been having a little experiment. Basically, Nvidia hooked me up, as the influencers say, with some GeForce Now, which is their equivalent
of Stadia. The sectoids use that as well?
Oh, I'd imagine they do. Yeah, absolutely. Why would you not?
GeForce Now, that's such an awful name. In the email when they sent you it, is I have some GeForce Now.
What have you been doing on it?
So I guess I've been basically what you do is it's not like Stadia in that it's its own platform and you have to, well, there's that. So it does actually work. I'll put that out there.
Bonus.
I've been relatively impressed with it, but what it is it's closer to xCloud than it is Stadia. So whereas Stadia is its own sort of platform and you have to buy games for Stadia, GeForce Now is based around the games that you already own in your Steam library or your Epic library, just PC games you already own, but that maybe you want to play on a better PC than the one that you own. So I generally don't need that because my PC is pretty good anyway, but it's certain. All right, I'm not trying to brag, but the one thing I will say is I built my PC in 2013, so it is getting on a little bit. I spent a lot of money on it to future-proof it. But what it certainly can't do is ray tracing, whereas the computer in the cloud that GeForce have can do ray tracing. So instead of playing Metro Exodus on my PC, I've been playing it in the cloud, and it works really well. The one thing that has taken me a little bit getting used to is you can only run it at 1080p, and my PC is a 1440p monitor. So when I started playing it, I was like, oh, this game's a bit blurry, and then realize that it's because I've got so used to playing at 1440p. If I stand back a bit and pretend that my monitor's more of a TV where I'm used to seeing stuff in 1080p, then it's like, oh, it looks fine. I can get ray tracing, which is nice. That looks pretty. But I think less so than ray tracing, to me, it was more figuring out, like, is cloud gaming viable for other things? So it supports Apex Legends and it supports Rainbow Six. So I've played some games of those. And
nice.
It like feels... no lag or anything? Nope.
So there's definitely occasionally a little bit of lag but it doesn't feel... I expected it to be quite sluggish and it to basically be unplayable in multiplayer games, but it's not. It just feels like when you get lag spikes in a normal game of Rainbow or a normal game of Apex. So I was surprised. I definitely didn't feel like I was super viable in those games, and I don't know if it's just because we haven't played Rainbow for a while and I've, you know, haven't been back to Apex for about 4 or 5 weeks now. But when I was moving my mouse, my gun was following it. Like, it didn't feel like there was a lag or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't feel like I'm in any way about to swap into cloud gaming and become, you know, a GeForce person. And especially not when GeForce suddenly have this problem.
GeForce, man. I'm a GeForce person now.
I'll put the green face paint on. Get my Warzone.
Just live in your room and you just send some avatar out for it. You are the cloud.
So, I'm not going to change, but the idea that if suddenly a new game comes out that my PC literally can't handle.
Yeah.
I quite like the idea that if it's supported by the GeForce Now system, which seems to be having a problem with a lot of games deciding that they don't want to be supported by it for some reason.
Oh.
But if it is, I quite like the idea that I could see it at certainly max settings, if not max resolution.
Does that work for VR games?
I do not know, but I'd imagine probably not, because you'd have to ship a lot of detail, because you'd be obviously... I'm trying to think what resolution my Oculus is. It's like 1600 by some other big number.
Yeah.
So that's a lot bigger than 1080p. And obviously with VR, you have to do that twice, right? Because it's stereoscopic.
Yep.
So I'd imagine if it can only do 1080p, it's probably not going to.
Nah. Mm. Oh, well. For now, we'll just have to play the Endless Search.
Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
I'm gonna do a quiz this week. And when I say that, I say I've got one sent in by a lovely man called Theo Grail, who says, "Hey guys.
Hey.
Oh, how are you doing?
He says, I Grail. Think he did a quiz similar to this sometime last year, so apologies to the creator, but I couldn't find what it was called, so I've chosen to name this Bangers and Mash. This is because you use the titles of absolute bangers off of each game's original soundtrack as a hint to the game. It's a pretty standard scoring. You get 5 points for guessing correct on track one and 1 point for getting it right on track five. You know the drill. Nothing imaginative. It's very good. I hope you enjoy it, and it's not an utter shit show for you all, except Joe. Oh, well, Joe's not here. I will say I like the concept a lot, but what I've done is pretty much written my own questions for it just to tailor it, because I thought, although they were good questions you sent in, I don't think they were games that you'd necessarily get.
The thing is, although they were good, I don't think they were good.
Well, I'm just saying they weren't for the right people on the podcast, is what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
So I've written my own ones. So here we go. So these are the titles of tracks on the soundtracks, or the scores, I should say, to these games. You have to guess the game.
We just have to guess the game, and there's no years, and so no composers or anything.
Some of them might be easier than I maybe thought. So if you get them straight away, I apologize. All right.
Okey-dokey.
So here's game number one and track number one. Swanky Maximino.
Oh.
Hotline Miami 2. Hotline Miami 1.
Swanky Maximino.
Swanky Maximino. Any clues?
No.
Okay, number two. Blue Hector.
Rezogun.
I think I've picked games here that I'm pretty sure you've all both played.
Okay.
So they're not obscure games. Blue Hector. Nothing for Blue Hector. No. Might be the one that... Okay, here we go. Lost Souls Alliance.
Days Gone?
No. You might be kicking yourself at this point.
Yeah, because I'm assuming that's a reference to, like, that's a group in the game, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Watch Dogs?
No. Okay, we're going to track 4. Bone Wagon.
Oh, Grim Fandango?
It is Grim Fandango.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the Lost Souls Alliance. Max Swanky Maximino. Maximino, I believe, is like is that the racetrack. Yeah. I think he's the racetrack owner, Maximino. And then Hector is the main villain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then the last track was going to be Ruba Cava, because
I
love Ruba Cava. That city, I would love to visit.
I want to play that game again, actually.
Oh, it's a good game. I just know it off by heart now. It's fun.
It's not a challenge. Yeah. You're just going through the beats. Yeah.
So that's 2 points to Dale. Okay, game number 2, track number 1. Echoes of an Old Life.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
No.
The Division.
No. I like where your head's at, though, Dale.
Yeah.
That's not me saying you're close. I just like
it. I know.
Any
you definitely guesses? Sense what I'm going for, yeah.
No, okay. Move on.
Track 2. A Giant's Prayer.
God of War.
It is God of War.
Hey!
There we go. 3 was Witcher.
McCreary,
of the
isn't it? The guy it that is. Does that. It's a very good soundtrack.
Incredible. Mm. We've seen, me and Dale have seen part of that live. What a treat that was.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was really good.
3 was Witcher of the Woods, 4 was The Summit, and 5 was The Ninth Realm. It's quite hard to order these in difficulty, so I apologise if it's not brilliant. But that's 6 points to Dale now. There's still all to play for, though, Matt. There's no link between these, by the way. So
okay, so I'll
don't
stop
even
try.
Game number 3. I pretty much almost just said the name of the game, so that's I just almost said it. Right. Track 1. The Drive, First Contact.
Oh.
Mass Effect?
No.
This is like a good answer. Don't know. No idea.
Okay. 2. A Ruined Village.
Uncharted 2.
No.
Ruined Village. Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
No. Shall I move on?
Yeah.
Track 3. Hard Road to the Castle.
Oh.
These are some very inspired track names.
You've got The Drive, First Contact, A Ruined Village, Hard Road to the Castle.
What is this? Oh. No idea.
It's about to get a lot easier on the next one. Okay. Do you want any last guesses before one of you inevitably gets it?
I'm drawing a blank.
Okay, track 4. Del Lago. I thought you'd get
maybe
it on
we're
that.
Not going to get it. Del Lago. Wait, what? I feel like I'm going to kick myself here.
I think
that is not ringing any bells.
I think especially you will.
Oh, God. Del Lago. I have no idea. I've drawn a blank.
Resident Evil 4?
It is Resident Evil 4. Del Lago is the lake boss monster, isn't it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You have to fire harpoons into it, don't you?
Yeah. It's easy when you think about it. The Drive, First Contact,
castle,
A Ruined Village, Hard Road to the Castle, Del Lago, and then track 5, End of Umbrella. So, there we go.
Wasn't the end.
2 points to Matt. So it's 6-2. It's getting close. Game 4. Green Hills.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Nah, put a gun you there, mate. You think I'd do that? Who do you tell
me? I was thinking, what Sonic is he going to? Is he going to make me go through every Sonic game? It's like Shadow the Hedgehog.
It's not a Sonic game, I'll give you that. But Green Hills, that's just more of a hint of what the setting of this game might look like.
Okay. Little Big Planet.
No.
Assassin's Creed 3?
No. Track 2, Prologue to the Ancient Land. It's not just Prologue.
To the Ancient Land. Is that an Assassin's Creed game? Oh, are you going to make me go for everyone?
It's not an Assassin's game. I'm not going to make you go for all of them, though.
Yeah.
To the Ancient Land.
Mm.
So you've got an idea of setting and time and kind of place. Get those images
ancient
in
lands,
your head. Get them swirling.
Green Hills. They're swirling.
Track three, Black Blood.
Oh, Death Stranding.
No.
Shadow of Mordor?
No.
Shadow of War?
No.
It's a Lord of the Rings game then, of some kind.
No.
But you're close. Oh, The Witcher?
No. Right. Black Blood. I'll move on if you don't.
Okay. Red Dead Redemption 2?
No. Okay, four. Resurrection.
Fuck.
Big theme of the game. Big theme.
Oh. Oh, Dark Souls? No.
Not
Green Hills and Dark Souls, is it?
Not really. It's a little bit of green. Black Blood. Resurrection. Do I need to go to track five?
Yeah, I think so.
Track five, Liberated Guardian.
Destiny? Oh, this is Shadow of the Colossus.
It is Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh,
she said Shadow say. Of twice, and I was like, no.
Okay.
I thought Black Blood, you might have got it.
It makes sense now. All
I know what you mean. You know what it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's 1 point to Matt, so it's 6-3. So
I've actually been listening to that soundtrack as well.
Oh, it's so like, within the last few days. Well. That is one of my favourite soundtracks. It is impeccable. Right, game five, the last game. You need to get it on the third one to tie. Ooh. Okay, here we go. Track one. Lure of Adventure.
Uncharted.
Uncharted 2.
3. 4.
It's 4.
Lost Legacy.
I thought that one might take longer, but there you go. I'm not going to lie, I was struggling a bit. So track one. I should have put that one lower down, is what I should have done. Then we had the 12 Towers, New Devon, just because I don't know if anyone remembers New Devon as the place he goes to.
Is that the place where you have to slide down all the shoal sections and it's all slippy?
I think New Devon is just the big island, isn't it? And then Libertalia is the city on New Devon.
Right.
I think that's it. Or is New Devon the like mansion place? I don't know, somewhere around there. Then four was Marooned, and then five was Sic Parvis Magna. Ooh, there we go. Okay. So Dale is this week's winner with... That is 11 points to 3. Unlucky Matt. I just thank you for playing, really. And thank you for Theo for the game suggestion. Yeah. I've accidentally just left the Google Hangout that we're looking at each other on instead of closing the Google Doc. People didn't need to know that, but I've let them know anyway. I'm back.
Can you mute your mic?
Oh. Yeah, I can do. There we go.
There you go.
No problems here. What are you worried about? Let's get some feedback. And I'm kicking off feedback. Oh, got lots to do today, haven't I? It's almost like I put this together. I've got one here from Zach Evans. It says, hi, guys. Having Zach Ryan on the podcast last week was very confusing. He seems like a lovely bloke, and I liked what he brought to the conversation. I like Zach as well. However... Mm. When you addressed him by name, while I was not concentrating / daydreaming, I thought you were talking to me instead. It put me in a panic, and for a split second, before I realised what was actually going on, and I tried to come up with an answer to your question. I realise how mad this sounds. Sorry. Yeah. I have a similar thing with the Zach sound in the middle of the word exactly. Love the pod.
Okay,
keep up
right,
the great
Zach?
Work. That's a mad thing.
That is mad. Yeah.
Well, we're talking to you now, and I hope you're doing well, Zach.
Yeah, you can answer us now if you want. We won't hear it.
Yeah, we can't hear, but I assume it's not bad, thank you. There we go. Thank you, Zach.
Lovely.
What have you got, Matt?
I've also got...
This isn't going to help him.
Zach.
He's going to talk it to me again.
A different Zach.
Yeah, this one's from Zach Toms. He says, hi, IGN UK podcast team. Hope you're doing well. I just want to tell you a tale of my most successful mashup meal.
Oh, the mashup meals. I love these.
Yeah, the mashup meals. It immediately came to mind when last podcast you discussed blending two distinct cuisines to form one gourmet amalgamation.
Amalgamation.
That got stuck on the end of my tongue.
Like a mashup meal.
Oh, exactly. I first tried this at the tender age of 19. A bunch of us stayed at a friend's house to watch movies and get high. Being young and relatively innocent compared to my friends, I declined to partake in the weed. However, when they got the munchies and went to a nearby corner shop, I decided to tag along, feeling somewhat peckish myself. They ended up buying the usual crisps, sweets, and etc. However, my mental faculties not being as impaired, I took a daring trip down the ready meal aisle. Ooh. I arrived at Italian. Crippled by indecision, I grabbed two separate foodstuffs, thinking that I could always save one for the following day. However, upon returning to the house, I succumbed to hunger. The food, you ask? Spinach and ricotta tortellini and a garlic pizza base.
What?
Double carbs? Are you mad?
When cooking the pasta and its accompanying tomato and mascarpone sauce, ooh, I began to feel experimental.
That's the same for his tomato mascarpone one. That's a very nice sauce.
See, I don't like mascarpone in my sauce. Prefer it to be on the more fruity side rather than the cheesy side. Yeah. Maybe it was because I declined the allure of the free drugs earlier, but I needed to do something crazy. I put the pizza base in the oven and then layered the pasta and sauce on top. I then finished the dish with a huge amount of cheese. Thus was born the tortellini pizza. To this day, it is still just as delicious, yet unholy, and I recommend you use your free time indoors to try it. Thanks for all the hours of podcasting, Zach.
I'm just wondering, doesn't that tortellini just fall off, like, as you're picking up the piece? Like, how's that work?
I guess the cheese fuses it.
Yeah.
I suppose it's not that mad, because you do have garlic bread with pasta. Like,
yeah, so I didn't think it was as mad as I thought it might be, because when you think, it's a pasta bake, but it's on top of the garlic bread. Now, I don't know if you've ever indulged yourself, but getting a wedge of garlic bread and sliding it under the pasta bake on your plates. And then eat it off your garlic bread. It's good stuff, mate.
With lasagna, mate, garlic bread is an absolute essential.
It'd
feel weird for me eating lasagna without a slice of garlic bread.
Have you got any weird mashups you like, Matt? I don't know if we've talked to you about this subject.
No, I'm not one for, like, I like making a good meal. I don't like going bonkers. I don't know. There's nothing that I would...
Do you never, like, I used to do a thing where it'd be toward just before going shopping and we're starting to run out of stuff, and I just look for the freezer and what have we got, and then just grab a load of things and just bang it all together on a plate and then just eat it all. That was more in my student-y sort of days.
You end up with, like, a sausage roll and a chicken Kiev?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It'd be something like that. Yeah, it'd be like one chicken mini fillet
a couple of sausage rolls. And, oh, God, the Kievs are a good thing, aren't they?
I haven't had one for a long time.
Treat yourself,
I like them,
this
but
week.
I haven't had one. I might do.
Get yourself one. Put it on a pizza.
I made some smash burgers yesterday. They were good. Ooh. Lovely time.
You've been living.
I know, right?
Dale.
Yes, I've got one from Dennis J. And he says, "Hi, lads. Long time listener, second time writer. Big fan of the podcast, despite, and maybe especially because of, Cardi seemingly going slowly off the rails during lockdown."
Joe, I thought I've brought it back a bit this week. I've been a bit more cohesive. I've offered actual opinions on things.
Been a bit more subdued.
Carry on.
I'm writing in because of the strange food combos discussed discussion reminded me that of 18 years of my life, I've watched my dad, who spent most of his life in Germany, eating Nutella, I suppose, and Edam cheese sandwiches for breakfast.
Whoa.
Nutella and Edam cheese. That is grim. Whenever a jar of the stuff has found its way into the household. Somewhat repulsed, but accustomed to it, I led those years thinking that this was just a German thing and it hadn't found its way further west. Not a German thing. Shortly after my 18th birthday, adult life hit me hard when I discovered that I'd been believing a lie for my life and was, in fact, some sort of bizarre thing my dad had invented in his college years. Thanks for your good work, boys, especially during these trying times.
That does sound particularly horrible. Like, cheese... I know, like, some cheese and chocolate, like a cheesecake, can work, but, like, you wouldn't dip a Baby Bell in some Nutella, would you?
And it's nutty chocolate as well. It's not just chocolate either. It's like...
It's a hazelnut spread.
I'm not feeling that. Did you used to do the thing when you were a kid and went to McDonald's and, like, dipped your chips in a milkshake?
No.
Okay, I thought that was a thing people did. Well, the
closest I had to that.
Just a confession there.
You know, in America, they've got an obsession with putting bacon in milkshakes. I've had that before. Yeah.
Have I just not lived? But I don't know about these milkshake recipes.
I know a lot of people like it, but I don't like the whole make a burger by slicing a donut in half thing and putting it in a donut.
Brioche bun, yes. Not a donut.
Yeah, brioche is fantastic. I'm generally not a fan of sweet and savoury together.
Yeah, same, yeah.
There you go.
Deadly combo.
If you have anything to say to us, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. It's a pleasure. It's just a pleasure to hear from you. It's just a pleasure. what music should we have at the end here? We've got the Predator theme. We've got... We might have used that a few weeks ago, though. I'm not sure.
I can't... Hold on. We've still not put any Final Fantasy music in this podcast. Yep,
but we didn't talk about Final Fantasy this week,
Talk about Streets of Rage. Could you get one of the soundtrack of Streets of Rage? It's lots of good stuff.
But look at Matt. He's
don't fancy that. Doesn't fancy now. That.
He's looking sad. Do you want some Final Fantasy?
What to keep do you it want? Thematically sound, I'm happy to go for Streets of Rage.
Or what about... One from Grim Fandango, because we spoke about the soundtrack for that earlier. Okay.
Do you know what, Dale? You can choose. I'll leave it in your hands.
I will.
How about that? Have a good week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.